Introduce yourselves, please.
I'm Sam Zeff, host of Statehouse Blend.
I'm Brian Ellison, host of Statehouse Blend.
All right, you can already tell this is going to be different. Play the intro.
This is Statehouse Blend. I'm Sam Zeff.
And I'm Brian Ellison. We're using coffee
and donuts
to better understand the legislatures on both sides of the state line,
the issues and the people in Topeka
and Jeff City. Here we go.
Welcome to this wrap-up edition of Statehouse Blend on KCUR 89.3. We are in the production studio here at KCUR 89.3. I'm Kyle Palmer, sitting in the host chair because, well, it's a special occasion. I'll let the normal co-hosts, Sam and Brian, explain.
Well, the two legislative sessions have wrapped up. Missouri just hours ago, it feels.
Hours ago.
And we're here to talk about what happened in Topeka and what happened in Jefferson City.
And we figured that Sam and I wanted to be able to talk about that, share some reflections, but couldn't decide which one of us were hosting. We had an arm wrestling competition. We kept going back and forth, decided we better just get someone else. So, Kyle, glad you could do this. Thanks for hosting today.
Well, thanks for asking me. It's a pleasure to step in again now that both sessions in Topeka and Jeff City have wrapped up. So I'll get right to it. Sam, you specialize in Kansas. Brian, you're over on the Missouri side. I guess for each state, I want to ask, what will this year's session be remembered for?
Well, if you'd asked me that before this last few days, I would have said the Missouri House Committee defeating Senate Joint Resolution 39, the so-called religious freedom constitutional amendment.
Which we'll definitely talk about more later.
Highly controversial. Senate passed it. Came down to a 3-3 tie vote in the House Committee. I would have said that would have been what the big story of the year, but I think in the long run, that's not going to be it. I think it's going to be the legislation that passed on the last day of the session about guns, both permitting concealed carry without a permit in Missouri and authorizing stand your ground legislation. We can talk more about that as well, but that's really probably the item that has the longest lasting, deepest significance for Missouri.
And quite a remarkable piece of legislation passed really with kind of a surprising last-second move, and we'll talk about
it
more
later. Right, and a veto-proof majority.
Yeah. Kansas. In Kansas, Sam.
Well, I think there's the perennial issue, and that is school funding. And, in fact, while the regular session and veto session is over, they will be coming back for what they call the sine-die session, which is the official wrap-up. Although I think a lot of people believe that based on what they heard during Supreme Court oral arguments on the equity portion of Gannon, that either right around sine-die or right after, I think a lot of people believe that the Kansas legislature is heading for a special session to continue to grapple with school funding.
And so, not over.
No, I don't think it's. I don't think it is. I don't think it is over. There is still the June 30th deadline for equity to be cured, unless the or the Supreme Court has threatened to shut down schools. I think based on the oral arguments that we heard, most people believe that they don't believe the legislature has cured equity. We don't know what the Supreme Court is going to rule, but I think there is a really good chance that we'll be back for a special session. So I believe we'll be back in this configuration on State House Blend at some future date.
Right. And Brian, just remind listeners, how does the veto session work in Missouri?
Right. So the governor has until July 14th to decide whether to sign, I think it's 140 bills that have stacked up on his desk. But then in the summer, the General Assembly will come back to consider all in one day, basically, whether to override the governor's vetoes.
And from either of your perspectives, any surprises in this session, things that you weren't expecting?
Well, I think there are some interesting things that happened. I think it's perhaps a little surprising that the Paycheck Protection Bill, the governor vetoed, that veto was sustained on the last week of the session when Democrat Maria Chappelle Nadal out of St. Louis switched her vote, having voted for it initially, voted against it with her fellow Democrats, and sustained the governor's veto. I think that was a surprise to come out of this session. And I think the surprise, no surprise out of the session, but it would be a surprise if you listen to the rhetoric at the start of the session, was how little occurred on ethics reform in Missouri. Every legislative leader, Democrat or Republican, House or Senate, talked about ethics reform from day one of this session. There were a few things passed. We can talk about that. But I think the biggest surprise is actually how little was passed. No limits on campaign contributions, no ban on lobbyist gifts. and a fairly small ethics improvement, I guess, in the area of requiring a waiting period before a member of the General Assembly can come back as a lobbyist, but only 6 months. So pretty surprising lack of action, given how much rhetoric there was at the start of the session.
After a scandal plagued 2015 in the Missouri General Assembly.
Right. And the scandal was around the alleged sexual harassment of interns in the General Assembly. There were no further incidents, thankfully, in this year's session, but there will be further conversation about what exactly has been done to prevent it in the future. Not a lot, other than a few minor administrative changes to the manuals of each house.
Any surprises in Kansas?
I think for me, Kyle, the surprise was more political than it was policy. And I think that is the fracturing of the conservative bloc in the legislature. You know, for many years, we've considered the three parties in Kansas, Democrats, moderate Republicans, conservative Republicans. But as they battled over budget and taxes and how to fill an ever-widening budget hole, I think we've seen the fracturing of the conservative bloc in both the House and the Senate, where conservative members of the legislature found themselves battling the governor and other conservatives over whether to close the LLC loophole, for example. And so I think that, for me, was a surprise that as the budget crisis worsened in Kansas, that there were people who were backing away from support that they've had for these tax breaks since 2012.
Can I ask, though, Sam, I mean, how surprised really are you at that? It feels like this has been sort of building toward things coming to a head, and this was just the year when it finally happened.
Things have been building towards a head, but I think when you look back at these conservatives, these are people who back the 2012 tax cuts. And up until recently, middle of the session maybe, not all of them,
sure.
But for some of them, they jumped off that ship and they said, you know what, we at least have to close the LLC and small business loophole. A lot of moderates voted no. That bill came up on the floor. A lot of moderates voted no, saying, no, that's not enough. We have to close the loophole, and we have to go revert back to the old income tax rates, which is the reason that they voted no. Conservatives, I think there was a lot who voted yes, they want to close the LLC loophole, change some other things around the around income taxes in Kansas. But there is an old guard, certainly led by Speaker of the House, Ray Merrick, and the governor, who say, you know, we have to stay the course. We just have to give it time to work. But frankly, I was surprised at how it fractured pretty late in the session for me.
Let's turn to some issues that have some resonance in both states. Maybe they weren't debated with the same intensity in both state houses, but they're both important topics in Missouri and Kansas. Starting with something you mentioned in the answer to your opening question, Brian, the loosening of gun restrictions or gun control regulations in Missouri. Explain in more detail the bill that was passed on the very last day of the session on Friday afternoon, and then what its impact may be.
Sure. And Missouri already has fairly loose restrictions when it comes to gun laws. It's fairly easy to obtain a permit. There are very few restrictions, but the laws became even more open, at least if this legislation is signed by the governor or if the General Assembly is able to overcome the veto. This law would allow permitless concealed carry of weapons in public spaces. So anyone who legally has a gun would be able to carry it on a concealed basis without a permit. It also, and this was part of what was so surprising in the action, they worked in the so-called Stand Your Ground legislation. And essentially what that says is that it is not illegal to use lethal force against someone if you have, quote, a reasonable belief that your life or your family's life is in danger. A reasonable belief is the standard.
Public place. This goes beyond just the bounds of someone's home,
so
which was
like
previously—
the castle law, which was already in effect in Missouri. But now in any place, if you think your life is in danger, you are legally permitted to use lethal force. This is the kind of legislation that was on the books in Florida in the Trayvon Martin case, where George Zimmerman was used lethal force and killed Trayvon Martin. And it was passed in the Missouri General Assembly, as we said, with a veto-proof majority. Democrats, of course, reacted very negatively to this. Legislative Black Caucus Chair Brandon Ellington called it legalized murder. There's some pretty sharp rhetoric. There's going to probably be continued conversation about this, I have a feeling, but even if the governor vetoes it, which he, by the way, has not said he will, but even if he does, It seems likely to become law.
Sam, how does that those ideas and that law resonate in Kansas? Of course, concealed carry, a big issue in Kansas.
Well, permitless carry in Kansas has been around for a while. I think the thing that interested me in Missouri was that there was a bill proposed that would allow conceal and carry on college campuses, exactly like the bill which is going to the law which is going to go into effect in July of next year, which will allow students, staff, faculty to conceal and carry on any college campus, including the KU Med Center, which we've written about here at KCUR. That got beaten back, and I think that gun control advocates were really celebrating that. But right. Then in the waning hours, I think it was a real surprise to see the Stand Your Ground law come up, because this is the first time a legislature has passed such a law since the Trayvon Martin case. And I think it's interesting in Missouri, and this is true in Kansas to a lesser degree, but certainly in Missouri, that there are, you know, these gun, these laws that loosen gun restrictions oftentimes have some Democratic support. So I think it would be very difficult for Jay Nixon to veto that bill.
And Nixon himself is a well-known sportsman and owner of guns.
Right. And I think he has expressed concern about the Stand Your Ground part of this law in particular. But again, hasn't committed yet to vetoing it. And even if he does, it seems likely to pass.
And we should say before we move on from gun control, also in Kansas, there was a bill passed, kind of colloquially known as the BB gun bill, that allows air rifle or gun clubs to or BB gun clubs to meet at school buildings in Kansas, which had previously not been allowed. It also expands public employees' ability to carry concealed weapons outside of their duties in public buildings.
Yeah, so the BB gun bill was opposed by some educators, but mostly because they think it's a local school board issue, right? This is something that educators don't believe the state should be involved in. I think there was a lot more concern over letting government employees leave their place of employment. So, for example, if you're working on a road crew, you can certainly be armed while you're there. If you're some sort of regulatory inspector, and your job takes you into restaurants or homes or construction sites, you now can carry your weapon wherever you go as long as you're on the job.
And your mention of schools is a good transition into our next topic that is, I think, relevant to both states. That is education funding and the relationship between the state and local school boards, especially pertinent in Kansas this session. Of course, you mentioned in your response to the opening question, Sam, that this whole conflict over the Gannon funding case is still very much up in the air. And how did school funding play out in the Kansas legislature this session?
Well, we have block grants. So there was a lot of discussion about what to do. There was a new school finance funding formula filed by the chairman of the House Education Committee and the Senate Education Committee. That was on the last day of the regular session. That went nowhere, although many believe that that may be the template when they come back next year. That, of course, depends on what happens in the election, both the primary in August and the general election in November. So as we move into the next school year, we're looking at block grants. This would be the second year of that. This is an amount of money that was frozen at 2014 levels. So essentially, school districts haven't increased their budgets for the last 2 years. This has been particularly vexing in Wichita, which has discussed going to a 4-day week. The school board decided to cut back on some transportation issues to save money. So that is, I think that is the school district which is grappling with this the most. But every school district has talked about where they're going to make cuts so that they can live within this block grant. Right now, it's very difficult to come up with a budget because they simply don't know what's going to happen with Gannon. Will they get more money? We don't know at this point.
Over in Missouri, it's kind of a good news, bad news scenario. Good news is they boosted spending by about $70 million for K-12 schools. Bad news is that's still tens of millions of dollars short of what the state says is constitutionally obligated to provide schools. And so what's the funding situation in Missouri?
Right. And they've even shifted the line of what they say the Constitution requires. So, yeah, I think this is an interesting thing. Missouri's education budget doesn't get the kind of attention that Kansas's does. There's not this judicial involvement. The flashpoints are in sort of a different place. But we've had legislators in here week after week saying things like, and they say it sort of informally, but, you know, honestly, I'm worried that Missouri might be going down the same road in some ways. The funding formula that is the constitutional requirement for how much is to be spent on K-12 education in Missouri has been perennially now way out of reach. The General Assembly hasn't funded at that amount in a decade or more. This year, the General Assembly votes to lower the funding formula, to
shift the goalpost,
to shift it to a much lower level. They do that. The governor vetoes it. They override the veto, and then they pass a budget that still doesn't meet the new funding formula. I think there's legitimate question, even though, as you said, they did in fact increase funding toward education, whether Missouri has the will to continue to increase that at levels to keep up with rising costs.
Which I think is what, I think conservatives would certainly argue is, hey, they're getting more money than they have in the past. We're actually giving them more money.
That certainly is the argument. And conservatives also would say that the funding formula, certainly before and perhaps even now, is unreasonable, that it calculates that number based on factors that go beyond the actual needs, particularly, they would say, these rural and more conservative legislators of urban school districts. So I think this is a wait and see. I think there's more to learn about how far that funding will go, but the funding formula is still out of reach as far as the General Assembly is concerned.
I just want to touch on higher education funding for just a moment. It doesn't get nearly as much attention in Kansas, but I do want to say that coming up this week, the Kansas Board of Regents are going to take their first crack at tuition and fees for the coming year. This comes as it appears, and now the governor has said that he's not sure, but it appears that the Kansas Board of Regents will take another $17 million cut in the coming year. That's on top of $17 million already allotted from them. Last year, in a budget deal with the legislature, tuition increases were capped at 3.6%. That cap has been lifted. So it's going to be interesting when the Board of Regents meets with the presidents and the chancellor of the University of Kansas about what they're going to hear. How are they going to budget? Will tuition go up more than the 3.6% than it went up last year to make up for these cuts? And this comes on top of a commitment by the state of Missouri to hold steady tuition at Missouri system universities. So Missouri continues to put more money into higher education. Tuition there is flat, but we don't know what tuition is going to be at the Regent schools in Kansas next year.
Now, more money than was given last year, but still less money than was requested by the university, and including others on the Missouri side in higher education, and very notably, still a $3 or $4 million cut to the central administration budget at the University of Missouri.
Some of that was politically driven,
well,
though, right?
How I would
much
say
the politics in this?
I'm
curious.
All of it was politically driven, I would argue, Sam. Most of the Republicans and Democrats would agree. In the case of Republicans, there's a displeasure with the way the university responded.
I'm getting Kyle some more coffee.
That's good. I appreciate that. There's still a donut if Kyle wants that as well.
I've already had two. Thank you very much.
I'm going to get myself a warm-up.
All right. Would you get me one as well, Sam, while you're there? I appreciate
that.
So the Missouri University budget includes this cut for central administration. Republicans say that they're displeased with how the university responded to the protests, to the slowness to fire Melissa Click, the professor in the communications department. But many in the Democratic caucus also very displeased with the university, essentially for bowing to some of those outside pressures. So the university became a real political football in a way that even in Kansas, I don't sense that there was that sort of political treatment of higher education, although they face a real funding crisis as a result of larger political issues.
Right. Right, and I think part of the other reason in Kansas is that the regents, while they have opposed any cuts and they have publicly stated so and they think they're wrong, the regents have all been appointed by Governor Sam Brownback. So you're not going to get that political dogfight with the regents and the legislature and the governor. But I do believe that. If they have to raise tuition significantly, I think that we'll start to feel it a little bit more. I also think the thing in Missouri is that the number of students the University of Missouri in Columbia is losing,
declining,
and that has got to be not just a worry, but something. Don't you think the General Assembly is going to have to take up in another session?
Right, because it's it's a profound cut to the budget as a result of the smaller students number. And while we're on the subject of the regents in Kansas, let's talk about the curators in Missouri for a moment. The Board of Curators at the University of Missouri has 9 seats. Only 6 of them have been filled. It's been that way for about 6 months now. Republican leaders in the state Senate said they had no intention of acting on any nominations by the governor. Governor, in his press conference at the end of the session on Saturday, suggested that he will probably go ahead and use recess appointments to fill the seats on the Board of Curators, even if they might only serve for a few months before he leaves office. So watch for that. The Board of Curators sort of limping along with 2/3 of its members, no people of color, at a time when issues of race are very present on the university campus.
Moving on to another issue that certainly can be spoken about in both states, and that's voter ID laws. Missouri passed a resolution that would require state-issued IDs at the polls. Now, this is going to have to be something that voters would vote on in November to ultimately approve, but it is a bill that has at least put that issue on the ballot. And this is something, of course, that Kansas has been in the news both locally and nationally for years now with Secretary of State Chris Kobach. So first with Brian, the legislation that was passed, how does it go beyond what Missouri already has, and how does it resemble Kansas?
Well, this will require photo ID to vote in Missouri unless the voter has a signed affidavit that they have to sort of prepare ahead of time to demonstrate that they are legitimate.
And we should
citizens.
Also just emphasize again, and that's also if voters approve it in November.
That's right. Yeah. And it will be November. The governor has said the governor gets to decide when constitutional amendments appear on the ballot. This will be on the November ballot. More people will vote, probably likely to be a more Democratic-leaning electorate in November than at a primary. And so the governor's trying to give it its best chance of being defeated. Democrats have tended to oppose this bill. But yes, it would require photo ID. Democrats in the Senate did extract some concessions from the sponsors of this proposal in order to keep them from filibustering it, to let the filibuster die. So that's where the affidavit comes in. There is a way without photo ID to get to the polls. That's going to be a burden for some, and there's a lot of concern that this will, in fact, continue to reduce voter turnout, at least on the Democratic side.
And from Kansas's perspective, this is all small ball, right? I mean,
they're way past
this voter ID thing. Although I will say that there are a couple things that have happened outside of the legislative process. First, the former Commissioner of Elections in Johnson County, a man named Brian Newby, who, while in office, had a pretty good reputation. He got himself nominated to a federal commission where he immediately created a controversy in Kansas, Georgia, and one other state over a form that would allow you to vote in federal elections but not local elections. So even though if you can't provide an ID in Kansas, you could vote in federal elections because federal law does not require you to prove that you're a U.S. citizen like you do in Kansas. So Newby goes, makes this decision on his own without commission approval. This has created any number of controversies. He's closely aligned with Secretary of State Chris Kobach. I'll also mention that when Brian Newby left office, they did a transition audit in Johnson County where they went in and found iPads, iWatches, baby monitors, thousands of books in his office, all bought with a county P card.
That is a separate issue, but
kind of fun nonetheless. And I urge you that if you haven't read that audit, you should read it because it's the only audit that I've ever read, and I've read hundreds that made me laugh out loud.
How do you get appointed to a federal commission during the Obama administration? Is this a Republican-designated seat on that commission? I was really surprised to sort of hear about
it. So he wasn't appointed to the commission. He was hired as executive director, and the commission did that.
Let's start to wrap things up by kind of taking issues that might be germane more to one state than the other. Brian, in Missouri, you mentioned right off the top, really one thing that this session will be remembered for is something that did not happen, and that is the passage of SJR 39. This is the measure that would have given constitutional protections to businesses who denied service to same-sex couples, kind of the wedding cake bill, as many people might refer to it in shorthand.
Right.
Explain what that was and explain why it didn't pass.
Yeah, this would have provided legal protections for, as you say, the baker or the florist who doesn't want to participate in same-sex weddings. The failure of this amendment, and you know, you get down to the very granular level, there was a 3-3 vote in a House committee that
because it had already passed
the
Senate and it had been moved to the House. Yeah,
overcame a filibuster to pass the Senate. I think its defeat is really a testimony to a couple of things. One, to the impact of the business community when it really does pull together the Chambers of Commerce of Kansas City and St. Louis and the Missouri Chamber of Commerce, which is actually a quite conservative organization most of the time. They all came out against this. Several major companies, major employers in Missouri, they cited the past experiences of Indiana and North Carolina with similar legislation that was perceived as anti-LGBT and the impact on business and on tourism in those states. That seems to have had an impact. The other thing that had an impact, though, I think, is just shifting mores. There were 3 Republican votes on that House committee that joined with the Democrats. All of those folks had something to lose politically. 2 of those Republican House members are running for Senate seats. They may face primary challenges or third-party challenges as a result of that. But they spoke in that committee of searching their consciences and of doing the right thing. We spoke here on State House Blend with one of the representatives from a small town in northeastern Missouri who—
Hansen?
Jim Hansen, yes, who spoke of talking to his pastor and thinking these things are better left up to God. And so it really has been an interesting shift in Missouri politics that's the way that would turn out. But I do think, Kyle, that this is not the last time that the Missouri General Assembly will be dealing with some of these issues.
Meanwhile, over in Kansas, tensions between the state legislature and the governor and the state Supreme Court really have never been higher. What's the state of that right now, especially since the Gannon case was just heard, and going forward, how will that affect business in Topeka?
Yeah, it never has been higher, and I don't think it's ever been more acrimonious. So there was any number of bills that were filed this year. None of them got passed, aimed at the Supreme Court. I think the most observers would say the most egregious was one that expanded the ways that you could impeach a Supreme Court justice, including being rude to people in the courtroom, and also one that said that trying to usurp the powers of another branch of government, which I believe they already have a name for, which is a coup d'etat. that bill didn't pass, but it's clear that there is a deep mistrust. Some might say hatred that conservatives have of the state Supreme Court. This is going to play itself out mightily in the fall. 5 of the 7 Supreme Court justices are up for retention. They stand for a yes or no vote every 6 years. The conservative Republicans, led by Governor Brownback, also anti-abortion forces, and I think some Koch-backed folks, are targeting 4 of those Supreme Court justices. The 5th is Caleb Stegall, who was just appointed to the Supreme Court. He was Governor Brownback's chief counsel. Because he was just appointed, he has to stand for retention the first year that he's in office. This is going to complicate this retention election. It's going to be very hard to, I believe, to educate the voters to say, yes, we need to boot these 4 Supreme Court justices off the Supreme Court, but we want to preserve Caleb Stegall. So this is going to be, I believe, perhaps the dominant political race in Kansas come the fall, because there's no real top-of-the-ticket race in Kansas.
And something else that I wanted to just mention to you, another thing in Kansas, kind of like Missouri, something that did not happen is noteworthy, and that is the closing of the business tax loophole. The 2012 tax cuts roundly defeated, didn't even really come close, though it seemed there was a little bit of momentum going into debates towards the end of the session. What happened there? And remind us what that loophole is.
Well, that exempts 334,000 small businesses in Kansas, LLCs, S-Corps, sole proprietorships, any farm income, from Kansas state income tax. So there was a bill filed, and it went down hard in the House that would have closed that loophole.
Filed by Republicans, though, we should say.
Yes. Now, what happened was that Democrats and moderate Republicans said no to that. Many voted no because they claimed it didn't go far enough. It closed the loophole, but it still kept Kansas state income tax rates at the reduced level. Top rate used to be 6.4%. Now it's 4.6%. Moderates and Democrats claim you have to roll the whole thing back to structurally fix taxes in Kansas. What will happen next? Hard to say. I think that now everybody's going to go home. They're going to see how the election plays out, and we're going to revisit this come next January.
Kyle, I want to mention a couple other things that didn't happen on the Missouri side that I think are really significant because they didn't happen. One that got a lot of attention is the so-called personhood amendment. So Missouri dealt with abortion again this year, but this time it was set aside on the last week of the session in the Senate, would not pass. This would have been a constitutional amendment that would have declared unborn children, fetuses, to be people, would have made it almost impossible for abortion to be legal under any circumstances, including cases of rape and incest and the life of the mother being in jeopardy. It was defeated, but I think leaders would say you should expect it to be back. The other thing that I really was surprised didn't pass this year in Missouri was the prescription drug database, the drug monitoring program. Basically, the opposition of one senator, Senator Rob Schaff, who will
of
be
St.
joining
Joseph, yeah.
of St. Joseph, who will be joining us for the podcast party. We'll talk about that here at the end of the show.
And a physician, is he not?
He is a physician himself. His opposition made it so that Missouri does not have this program, which is present in all 49 other states, essentially a statewide database to keep track of prescriptions and medications that individuals are taking to avoid overdoses, drug interactions, keep track of a potential abuse of prescription drugs. Rob Schaff said that he believed this was a violation of patient privacy, that that sort of data shouldn't be collected in one place. And so that bill was set aside. But a lot of surprise about that, because Missouri, again, is the only state without such a program.
Final question for both of you. I mean, the sessions are over, maybe, in 2016. But, of course, 2016 is a big political year nationwide because of the presidential race. How do you see that playing out or affecting politics in both states?
I think in Kansas, I think in the year of Trump, we have no idea what's going to happen, how that's going to affect the top of the ticket. But I do believe that I think that we're going to see a very vigorous August primary. I think we're going to see some incumbents in the Kansas legislature go down in August. And then what happens in November, I think it's difficult at this point to see. But I think that we'll, after the August 2nd primary, I think we're going to have a little bit better idea of what the next Kansas legislature is going to look like. A lot of incumbents are, especially in Johnson County, but in other places around the state, are facing primary challenges. A lot of educators, Kyle, are getting into politics, former teachers. The former president of the Hutchinson Community College is running for a state Senate seat. So you're seeing a lot of people either with PTA backgrounds, educator backgrounds, superintendent backgrounds, who've decided, you know what, this is the only way in their view, that we can protect public education in Kansas. So they're jumping into the arena. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out in the August primary.
And in Missouri?
Well, I think similarly, the presidential election throws all of this into stark relief. I think there is a chance that Missouri is actually in play in a Trump-Clinton presidential face-off, which will bring ratchet up the political level in Missouri, and I think that will affect all of the candidates, even down to the legislative level. On the other hand, without the fracturing that Sam spoke of in the Republican Party in Missouri, you don't see that kind of fracturing within the Republican caucuses in the House and Senate in Missouri. We won't see the potential for, I think, as many primary challenges in either party. I think we're probably not headed for much change, frankly. One interesting note, though, about the future. We did, on the last day of the session, hear that the Democratic leader in the Missouri Senate, Joe Kiviny, is going to be appointed to a judgeship, so he'll be leaving his leadership post. We don't know who the next Democratic leader in the Senate will be. There's only seven left to choose from. Two of those are from the Kansas City area, Jason Holzman and Kiki Curls. I think both are potentially in the running for that sort of position, but of course the Democratic leader of a seven or eight-member caucus may be a job that some people just wouldn't want.
And speaking of that, there is going to be a leadership change in the Kansas legislature in the coming session. Ray Merrick will not be speaker. There is already jockeying and maneuvering and positioning among maybe four or five Republicans for that speakership. And I think we'll see new leadership at the top of the Kansas Senate as well.
Well, thanks to our guests, and I put my air quotes around guests, for joining us today on this special edition of State House Blend, the normal co-hosts, Brian Ellison and Sam Zeff. Thank you for giving me the chance to host this wrap-up session of State House Blend. Now for the first...
You've done a fine job, Kyle.
Well, thank you.
We're both nervous about our positions at this point.
I'm not nervous.
Well, maybe it's just me.
But he did a fine job.
I agree.
But Sam's a cool customer. You can't really shake him up. But for the first time ever now, we have you suggest our walk-off songs, and so you get to decide what are the songs you want to go out to today.
You know, it's time for a true confession. I'm not really good at this part. I nod and I agree with the guests. Oh, yes, good choice. I very rarely recognize any of the songs that they suggest. So I've gotten some help on this, and I'm going to suggest that Misery by Maroon 5 would be a good way to end this year's legislative sessions. What do you think?
Just to say, Kyle, you are the decider on this, and because the Kansas legislature is going to come back, because we're going to see allotments from the governor to balance the budget, I am going with Mack the Knife, but the Louis Armstrong version. Not that I'm opposed to Bobby Darin. He's a good South Philadelphia guy. I like that. But I am a big fan of the Louis Armstrong version of Mack the Knife.
All right. So we'll have Satchmo take us out today on State House Blend.
That was just like that. Not even considering my
You said
my
it was
suggestion.
My choice. Well, this is the power I get in this chair.
That's the only
given,
power you get, my
that's
friend.
That's that. I guess.
That's
the,
right. only reason I accepted this job was so I'd be able to do that.
We all should that say. Hey, one more thing, Kyle. We're having our podcast party, a live taping of State House Blend. It's Thursday, May 19th at Westport Flea Market's Buffalo Room. We'll have Missouri Senators Rob Schaff and Jason Holzman, who we mentioned in this program. They'll both be there live. We'll take your questions. You can be the citizen guest, so come join us. Again, that's Thursday, May 19th at 7 p.m., KCUR's podcast party, State House Blend Live.
We should say State House Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp. Thank you very much, Matt. You can find us on iTunes or on kcur.org/statehouseblend. If you use Twitter, that's a very good way to keep up on the show and the news from Jeff City and Topeka as well. We try to use the hashtag StateHouseBlend. You can find a shorter version of us on the air on Tuesday mornings as part of Up to Date at 11 a.m. on KCUR. I'm Kyle Palmer from KCUR 89.3. This is State House Blend. Thanks for listening.
When the shark bites with his teeth, dear, scarlet billows start to spread. Fancy gloves, though, where's Mackie, dear? So there's not a trace of red. On the sidewalk, Sunday morning.